All right, season three, episode three. I'm here with John Hune.
Hello.
If you guys don't know him, you probably drank some of his beer because I think he's had beer in every brewery that's been around for about a year.
Not every. I'm getting close.
Getting close. Okay. Yeah. But White River.
Yes.
Springfield Brewco more than once.
Twice at the Brewco.
Yeah, and now.
I've got a new one coming up at Lost Signal.
Lost Signal. Okay. Yeah. We'll get to that later, but. Yeah. Let's talk about when did you start homebrewing?
I started in 99. In November every year for probably 30 some odd years, the American Homebrew Association has held a big brew day / teach a friend the homebrew day. And I was working with a guy who was homebrewing at the time, and it was all just kind of we were just talking about it one day, and he invited me to his house for a brew day, and it happened to be in 98 at teach a friend the homebrew day. And I loved the whole process and watching it and everything and of course drinking his beer, but it still took me a while to get the ball rolling to begin making it myself, because in that time there wasn't the equipment availability as there is now, and the ingredients were nowhere near what they are now. So it took me a while to get a brew pot, to get a place to ferment, and to get all the stuff together. So it was almost a year to the day when I brewed the first time.
And you started out with pieces, parts?
Yeah, I had an old, I still have it, an old Budweiser half-barrel keg, 15.5, cut the top of it off, and fortunately I was a machinist at the time, so I had a die grinder and could cut all the weld off of it and smooth it out and everything, so I don't have the little opening in the top like a lot of people do with their kegels. Mine's a full open. And so I used that for a long time, and I did extract for probably the first 10 years of my brewing. So right around 2010, I started moving into partial mash and then all grain in 2014.
And what are you using now?
I have picnic coolers and a gravity-fed system, a three-tier system that I made from the lumber I have laying around. I built it from, it's wooden. And Blickman, it's actually an Anvil brew pot, a 20-gallon brew pot, so that way I can make big batches if I want to.
Yeah.
So I'm not limited to making 5 or 10-gallon batches if I want to make a big batch of something. And I have, because I've got some standard house beers. Fiddleback Porter is one of my house beers that when I make it, I never make less than 10 gallons of it, because it just goes and goes and goes. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you get really involved in the club, and then the brewing as a competition?
For the longest time, I was just doing it for myself because it was fun. I knew of clubs, but they weren't really that active until about 2014. I went to the Craft Beer Bash in July on the square, and I ran into the Homebrew Zoo, and the current president, Randy West, he pulled me aside and he said, "Why haven't you been to one of our meetings?" And I said, "Because I've never been invited." And he handed me a business card, and I went to the first club meeting the following month, and I've been a member since. And in fact, now I'm one of the officers in the club. But the competition stuff, I didn't really get into competitions until about 2016. Up to that point, I never really thought I'd enter in a competition, but we host two a year at the Homebrew Zoo, and every spring we have one called Open Season, and it's open to all beer styles. And I went to judge that competition, didn't have a beer entered, but I signed up to judge the competition, and I thought it was just the coolest thing ever. It didn't hurt that I was paired up with Ashton Lewis, so I learned a lot about judging beer from him in just that one day of sitting at a table, drinking the same beer and talking about it. And from that point on, I thought, I'm going to start gearing towards competitions. And the porter that I was the first one that I won with, it's one that I've been making since the very beginning. I used to make it as an extract, then a partial mash, and now it's a full grain batch. And English porters are one of my favorite beers of all time. And it's one that's, I'll never change the recipe again. I have it in my head. I could just spit it out right now, everything down to what yeast I use and everything like that. And so I being in the club, being around people who are competition guys, Keith Wallace, Chris Becker, they've won the Springfield BrewCo scale up themselves in the past. Keith has won two of them. And just hearing them talk about it and how cool it was to win the contest and get to, you know, get prizes and stuff, it kind of got me into it. And of course, listening to the Brewing Network, where they have people on all the time, like Jamil Zainashev, kind of like the god of homebrewing. He, you know, won the Homebrewer of the Year twice that I know of, and then Gordon Strong has won it three times. So hearing those guys on the radio and on podcasts talk about it kind of got the bug going, and I still do it to this day now. And at some point, I'll stop entering contests and focus more on the judging side of it. But right now, I'm kind of 50-50.
So what is the hardest part you find with competition?
Hardest part with competition is trying to gear my entries into what the competition... Let's say, okay, for example, my second scale-up with Springfield BrewCo was... I won that at the Big Brothers Big Sisters Beer Fest in November. And I know what the lineup is at Springfield BrewCo. I know that they haven't had a milk stout in years, let alone a nitro milk stout.
Mm-hmm.
So I geared the beer for that, to that thought process. Same thing with Lost Signal. I know what kind of beers he likes. I know what kind of beers he serves. And I made a sessionable beer because I know that that's one of his cornerstones, is he wants his beers to be sessionable so you can have more than one pint at a time. And that's one of the things that I do, that it's not really difficult, but it's something you have to stop and think, okay, I'm not just going to make an APA or an IPA. What is it they're really looking for? And then gearing toward that. Beyond that, as far as the home brewing process, the hardest part is making sure that you have everything clean and sanitized. If you have that, you're halfway there to having a great beer. If you don't do that, you don't have a chance.
Yeah, so what do you use for sanitization?
I use a powdered brewery wash to clean, and then Star Sand.
Okay.
I used to use bleach way back in the day before Star Sand was a thing, and then I transitioned to vinegar, and then iodophore, and then when Star Sand came out, it's like I never looked back.
Yeah. Not much you can mess up on it.
No, not really. I got a spray bottle out in the garage right now that if I need to use it, just squirt, 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 and I'm done.
So what competition do you look most forward to? I mean, BrewCo has one every year, right?
Well, we're changing our contest structure within the club.
Okay.
We've always, in the past, been tied to the spring competition. The local grand prize is a scale-up with Springfield BrewCo. We are now going to make this competition in the spring, starting in next year. It's going to be open to all styles, but it's going to be just a straightforward BJCP competition. There's not going to be a scale-up tied to it. However, our fall competition, which has always been kind of lower as far as entrance level and number of people interested in it, We're talking, and I'm not going to say too much because it's still nebulous.
Yeah.
We're talking about doing something similar to a Shark Tank, where we have all the beers judged. The best beers, the medal winners that are local beers, will be put on a table, and every brewer in the area has an opportunity to pick one of those beers to scale up.
Okay.
So we could have multiple scale-ups from one competition.
Yeah.
And we like that idea because, number one, we're not tied to this competition is an SBC competition only. It's not always necessarily the case, because they do have the right of refusal if they don't like any of the beers we put on the table. But it also opens it up to more people to win competitions, because there's kind of a running thing in my club that I won four contests in a row until this last open season. I didn't win a scale-up. But the guy that got second place was the same guy every time. And I would have died if I was him and I got second four straight times, especially with the wort challenge at White River when Stacy said your beer would have won if we hadn't remembered to taste his.
Yeah,
he wasn't happy to have heard that. It would probably have been better if he just didn't know that he got second.
Yeah, I was there when you guys turned in your beer, and I think it was one of those where you had brought it in and they had left it in the back and forgot about it.
Yeah, they found a six
and
pack.
It was one of those where they had done every single one of them, and then they found that one, and it was like, what is this? Somebody just put it in here. And then they had to go back and, like, retaste all the ones that they thought were going to be winners are right there at the, and then yours, yours won at last second.
It makes the stories even funnier in the respect that when we had the day where we went to pick up our 5 gallons of wort, I got the last 5 gallons. The guy behind me in line just got like a gallon and a half.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and so it made it even worse for Scott that, okay, I got second. And you got the last 5 gallons. If you hit the wrong stoplight on the way in, you wouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I do remember that. It's a great story.
Yeah.
But you made, so what are the beers that you made that won?
Well, first one was Fiddleback Porter, an English-style porter at Springfield Brew Co. About this time last year, went to GABF, did not medal, but it advanced to the final round. Then after that, did the Wort Challenge at White River, which would have been in September, October of last year. And that was a tropical stout, dry-hopped with Citra and Cascade. And there's no such thing as a dry-hop stout in the BJCP guide. So. And that's why I made that, because Stacy specifically said, I don't want something to style. Okay, that's not the style.
Yeah.
Plus it's 8.5%, so it's a big beer.
Oh, it's still on, too, if you guys want, if anybody wants to go try it, it's still on up there.
Yeah, and it's holding it pretty well. The hops have started to fade on it, but it's still a big, strong stout. And I was at the Beer Knobbers club meeting last week, and it was still on tap then. In fact, they got a picture of it and passed it around to the club members and asked me to speak about the beer. So, and then after that, I won the Beer Fest scale up from Big Brothers Big Sisters in November, and that was the milk stout I talked about earlier. And they put that on Nitro, and that was in January of this year. And then most recently, I won last year's fall club competition, and Tyler at Lost Signal, he wanted to take that beer and enter it in GABF. Well, it's a session IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And a session IPA, if we had brewed it in the fall, would now just be a no-hop character, malty beer that wouldn't have any resemblance to an IPA at all. And it comes in under 5%. So it's just hops, and hops with just a little bit of malt backbone. So we brewed that at the end of June and dry hopped it on July 5th. It should be coming out pretty soon.
Okay.
Like within the next week or two.
Okay, and then the next competition will be your guys's?
Yeah, our Ozarks Open. That's what we call our fall competition. And it's going to be sponsored by Tie and Timber. They're going to be offering an opportunity for a scale up for the winner from Missouri.
Oh, you're fine.
Okay. they wanted to, most of our scale up competitions have been like with White Rivers. If you picked up a 5 gallon a batch of the wort, you're entered.
Yeah.
But with like Springfield Brew Co., you had to have your beer at the Beer Fest or the open competition in the spring. Any beer within a radius that he picked out for the counties, how far away, and Rolla was like the very far east, and Joplin would be about the farthest west. So if you were from Kansas City, you had no opportunity to be in the scale-up. And he did that because in years past, somebody from like Kansas City would win, and they wouldn't want to come down for their brew day. So they'd brew the beer, and there wouldn't be the photo opportunity, and the home brewer wouldn't get the experience of the scale-up. So he wanted to make it into a local. With Tie and Timber's sponsoring of this fall competition, they're opening it up to Missouri as a whole. So if you're in Kirksville, and you enter, and you win the best in show, or you medal. How we do that is we have a best in show, and it may or may not be the one that gets the scale up. The best in show has its own set of prizes. Then there's a scale up opportunity because the best in show may come from Louisiana, which has happened to us. We've had a winner from Louisiana that won the best in show a couple of years ago, or was it a couple of contests ago, they brought in a Schwartz beer that I actually judged, and it's just, when I tasted it, I just pushed my cup away and said, well, we just got our best in show. Because it was a phenomenal Schwartz beer. I'd never had one that good, not even a professional.
So what was that story? Why Louisiana?
That's where it was. We put our competitions on the American Homebrewers Association, so anybody in the country can see them because they're on the list of open competitions. And this guy entered the competition and got best in show.
Wow.
the score that Keith Wallace and I judged on that, it was above 45, and that's considered world class. 50 is a perfect score. So it was a phenomenal beer. And the when I won the Fiddleback Scale Up, the funny story with that is I did not win the best in show. I actually had got third place in my category, but anything that's medaled, it would be first, second, or third, gets to the table for the local scale-up competition. Well, the beer that got first in my category had a 50-point score, and it got best in show. The second beer in that category, same guy, got a 48 and got runner-up best in show. So if we didn't have it where medal winners could qualify, that beer wouldn't have been brewed, and I got a 46. So... Yeah, this is one of those things. You run up against a 50, you can't, there's, it's done at that point.
Yeah, so, there's no winning after that.
Right, and so with Lost Signal, he wanted to open it up to all of Missouri, and the reason is Curtis and Jennifer are from Colorado, mm-hmm. and they wanted to model it similar to what they've seen in the breweries in Colorado whenever they've had their beach ACP competitions. We're going to host the award ceremony at Tie and Timber. We haven't set the date or time yet. It's going to be sometime in November, but we're kind of bumping into the festival season at that point. So we're trying to iron out the deals and stuff because almost every weekend from the middle of October to Thanksgiving, there's something going on beer fest wise in Springfield. So we're trying to iron out the deals, details of when we're going to host it and when they would judge the beers that they would pick from to make the scale up opportunity. So it's still nebulous. We'll post it on our Facebook page, the Zoo's Facebook page, and it'll be in the AHA website under the competitions for anybody to see that to enter. And it's going to be open to all categories, just like our spring when we've decided to make it like that. So it's easy. We get more entries. And that way we have more beers coming in and more to judge, and it's a lot more fun when you have more beers to pick from.
Oh, definitely. So what is your process when you sit down to make a beer for a competition? You have to, I guess you wouldn't start the same place every time.
But... No, not necessarily. With the Lost Signal that we just brewed, I don't make a lot of IPAs. There's a lot of people that make them better than I do, and IPAs aren't my area of expertise. I'm more of an English beer guy and lagers too. I like German lagers a lot. But what he did with that competition is he took the BJCP guide and marked through the ones that he did not want us to submit a beer in that category. He didn't want a wee heavy. He didn't want a barley wine. But he was okay with a standard IPA, not a double IPA. Anything sessionable he picked, like cream ales and blonde ales, anything like that he picked.
Yeah.
So when we got that list, my first thought was I looked through the list to see, okay, what beer are most people going to make? And there was a specialty IPA category, and I thought, okay, New England IPA wasn't a category at that time. It wasn't a recognized style, but it was everywhere. In fact, that's what that is right there.
Yeah.
And so I thought about doing a New England IPA, and then I got to thinking, you know, he likes beers that are 5 and lower. He has some that are higher, like he's had a couple of double IPAs that are higher. Mm-hmm. But most of his beers, including his smoked porter, are 5 or below. So I went with that direction. I kind of, like I was talking earlier, I felt focused on what is it he wants. Mm-hmm. I basically do what they tell you if you want to be an author, know your audience. And so I kind of went at it that way, and I'd never made an IPA before, and I was stunned that I even made it to the table for the selection. And I had a cream ale that also made it to the table. And the story that I heard, and I wasn't there at the time, Greg Knight told me this story when he called me, and the first thing he says, "I really hate to tell you this because I'm tired of telling you this, but you won again." And he told me the story that Tyler and Derek Kern were judging the beers, and when they made their selection, I'd say the first thing they did it blind. They didn't know who it was, who had what beer. And after they picked the one they liked, they said, "Okay, please tell us this isn't the guy that's been winning all the time." And Greg said, "It is." And then Derek said, "Well, our second favorite's the cream ale. Let's do that one. It's his too." So they went with the IPA.
Oh, man. So what is your secret? How do you brew beer different than everyone else?
I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
I have my system and my process down to where I have checklists and notes, and I have a recipe that I keep with me on brew day, but I just use it as reference. There's very seldom that I even have to do anything special on brew day. Once I set up and start brewing, it's a process, and it's just, you do it enough times, it becomes rote. You don't have to think about what you're doing. That's one of the biggest things. The second thing that really improved my beer quality is, we were talking earlier about water quality, and I sent my water samples off to be get readings back, mm-hmm. multiple times throughout the year, because I could tell when I drink my water throughout the year, it tastes different. Depending on if we have a drought, if we have a big rainy month, the water tastes different that month. So I have several readings of what the water can do in this time of year. And so depending on, like right now, it's kind of dry. We mm-hmm. haven't had much rain, and the lakes are down. So I have a Ward Labs analysis from a dry season. So I would, the next beer, if I was make my Fiddleback Porter, the water is the only thing that changes every time on that recipe,
okay.
because it depends on when I'm making it. And that really took my beer from being good to now it's medal-winning beers. The other thing is that I've got a fermentation chamber that I can hold the fermentation temperature within a degree, plus or minus. And yeast, the temperature you hold the fermentation at is important, but it's not as important as making sure the yeast stays at that temperature, because they don't like fluctuations.
No.
Unless you're doing a Saison, the yeast wants to stay. If you have it at 66, they want to stay at 66.
Yeah.
They don't want to go to 70, then down to 62. That's when you start getting the stuff like Band-Aid flavors and acetone.
Really bad off flavors.
Yeah. You get those, those yeast aldehydes and phenols that you don't want.
Yeah.
Unless you're making a Belgian and you want phenols, well, that's when you ramp the temperature up to get those phenols, like the bubble gum and the
banana flavors. Okay. So what's next for you?
People have asked me many times when I'm going to open a brewery, and at this point it's not going to happen. There's two reasons. The market in Springfield is such that by the time I was able to even open a brewery, there's probably going to be 10 breweries in Springfield. And Springfield's big, but I'm not sure it's big enough for 11 or 12 breweries. And the second one is, when you hit the half century mark, your mindset changes. So physically I could do it, but I also think I'm closer to getting Social Security than not. And if I was to open a brewery and it failed, I don't want to be standing at Walmart greeting people. I don't. So if I was to open a brewery, it would be in Joplin. That's where my family primarily is. My grandson lives there. My wife's family is there. My brother lives there. I've looked at the city ordinances in Joplin, and there's a reason there's no brewery in Joplin.
Really?
It is super difficult to get through anything through like that in Joplin. For whatever reason, they've got all kinds of hurdles and obstacles put up, and I'm not going to fight the city council for something that may or may not make it. So,
there's always Oklahoma side.
There is, yeah. true, I could go to Kansas.
Relaxed over there, yeah.
I could go to Baxter Springs.
Yeah.
Not that far away. But as far as, I'm just going to continue to make my beer at home. I'm going to continue in your contest for now. I want to get BJCP certified. I've taken the entrance exam, but I haven't had a tasting exam yet,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of difficult around here.
Yeah,
because to get a tasting exam, you need 3 national ranked judges, and we've only got 1 in the area. And so it's kind of the whole thing about, like trying to find a job without experience. They want experience, but how do you get experience if they don't give you? That's that whole self-fulfilling prophecy type thing. So beyond that, I'm just going to continue to, make beer at home, and enter in contests, go to events, and just enjoy the hobby.
And anybody who wants to join the zoo,
yeah, we have numbers. Yeah, we have a Facebook page. We're right now currently revamping our website. We're moving to a new hosting site, so it's currently down. It won't be long before we get it back up. We were hosting on a site, or we had a host that was not one of the bigger hosts, so it was costing us a lot of money, and we had very difficult time making any changes to the website. So we're going with, you know, I can't remember if it's Squarespace or GoDaddy. We're going with one of those like that has templates already there that we can just go in and change them. That's above my pay grade. We've got a couple of guys in the club that are really good at that stuff, so I'm going to leave it up to them. But we have a Facebook page, Zymergist of the Ozarks. I have a business card. We have lots of documentation for stuff like that. So if anybody's interested in joining the club, we meet on Tuesday nights at 7:30, third Tuesday of the month, upstairs at the Home Brewery in Ozark behind Lambert's. And it's open to anybody that wants to show up. You don't have to be a home brewer. We've got some people in our club who've never brewed a batch of beer. They're members. They're dues-paying members. And we like to promote the love of beer and home brewing. So you don't have to be a home brewer. You don't have to love home brewer. You can bring Yingling in. We will drink Yingling. We like it. So the home brewery out in Ozark is where we meet, and it's a pretty good club. We have a lot of interesting stuff. Next month we're having a club only contest. We're calling it Serial Killer. And the beer had to have 20% of the fermentables come from breakfast cereal.
I've heard about this before.
Yeah, and I've got one in a keg right now that's conditioning, and I probably will not win the contest with this one because I tried something different, and it did not work the way I'd hoped. Unicorn cereal doesn't work the way you want it to.
Oh, man.
It started out purple, and now it's yellow.
And that sounds awful.
It's not great. And all I taste is Mosaic and Vic's Secret hops. That's all I taste in it. There's no cupcake flavor.
No cupcake flavor.
And that's what that's what the cereal tastes like if you just put a handful in your mouth. It tastes like a cupcake. It doesn't look or taste anything like that now.
Break down in that order.
No. And in this contest, we have a club trophy where each winner gets their name engraved on it, and they get to hold that trophy until the next time we have the contest. We also have a last place trophy called the Sacco. And I've said it all along, if I don't win first, I want to get last. Because I want that trophy.
All right. Well, be on the look for the IPA at Lost Signal in the next week or two.
Yeah, and he's named it Mule Cart. The name I originally had for it was Project Icarus, and I named it that because people in the club told me I was flying too close to the sun, having won so many contests. But Tyler impressed upon me the difficulty to say Icarus if you've had three beers. So we changed the name to something easier to say. Mule Cart's easy to say.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going with. And then it's kind of got the local Ozark kind of spin on it with the mule. And so.
All right. Well, thank you. And we'll have you on again for sure.
I'd love to.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.